That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and boarded my plate. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
I apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
I'm Steve Rosenbloom. This is Saturday Suckage. Let's see who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks, and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Eloy Jimenez.
Hey, you guys not gonna make anyway. You guys are suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Toby!
Oh my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
At the front of the field, we suck!
Terry Bars!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Lim Hendricks!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck. I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Went.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
The legend, Steve Dahl.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
It sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach LaVine.
It sucks to have it happen game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Mike Tomlin.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Pete Fairbanks. No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck. He's the best. Pete Fairbanks is just the best on this roll call. AJ Pierzynski.
They should have just come out and said, hey, we're going to suck this year. And everyone would have been like, okay.
How good is that? Today's the anniversary of the White Sox winning the World Series. And there's AJ Pierzynski talking about the current state of the White Sox. Pedro Grifol.
We're 20 games in. Our record sucks.
Dasher hero Michael Kopech.
It sucks, man. There's no easy way to put it.
Mark Burley.
So it did suck.
JD Martinez.
They say we suck, we suck. Let's suck. Let's go suck together. Let's go have fun sucking.
Bob Costas.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Sean Sears.
What's up, Rosie?
Hey, we're here. We suck so you don't have to. That's why we do this. It's an act of, it's just an act of the act of the heart. It's generosity. We're givers, not takers here. We're pleasers, not teasers. We're also broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Phone number here at the Score, 312-644-6767. That'll get you to our listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That number, 312-644-6767, also gets you to the Score's text line where the WB Club is already checking in. All right, so let's get to the news. Let's start with the news today. From the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, quarterback Jaden Daniels, he of the opposing Commanders, listed as questionable, will go through walkthrough meetings and treatment on his rib cartilage injury today. Coach Dan Quinn said the goal is to get Daniels as many walkthrough reps as you can, and that continues. They'll see how he feels Sunday. That's the tweet from Ian Rappaport. So it's not really news, but that's the news. The update is that's where we were kind of Monday when Dan Quinn said it's week to week, not day to day, not hour to hour. As for tomorrow, I'm confused, bemused, addled, and flummoxed. That's also my law firm, confused, bemused, addled, and flummoxed. Speaking of that, I need a literary agent. All you out there listening, all you literary agents out there, I have my novel finished, have the manuscript finished, I have my query letter ready to go. I need representation to all the big five publishers. So I will send you my query letter if you're legit. DM me at Steve Rosenblum on Twitter. But that's not why you called. Spent this week, as we all did, trying to evaluate Bears, Commanders, their game tomorrow, which is in D.C., their Fox's late afternoon headliners. Who are the Bears? Where are the Bears? What would a victory mean? Bill Parcells famously said, "You are what your record says you are." The Bears are 4-2. They're alone in last place in the NFC North. But they're also the 7th seed in the NFC playoff standings, at least as of this morning. And they're 7th by winning the tiebreaker with the Eagles based on conference winning percentage. Making this more difficult to understand, to be able to get a handle on, to wrangle water here. All four NFC North teams are above 500. According to the NFL, it's the first time since the league went to 8 four-team divisions in 2002 that four teams from the same division had winning records entering week 7.
Bears.
Thank you, Mark. So the entire NFC North is in the playoffs right now. I know they're not starting right now, but right now they're in the playoffs. People say it's the toughest division in the NFL. You need to ask those people if that includes the Bears. The Bears have beaten the 3-4 Rams, the 1-6 Panthers in the NFC in those conference games, and apparently those count in breaking the tie with the Eagles. The Bears' two losses came to teams that are now above 500. Houston, 5-2, a team freshly beaten by the evil, dreaded Packers, and Indy, now 4-3. The combined record of the teams the Bears have beaten, Tennessee 1-5, Rams 3-4, Carolina 1-6, Jacksonville 2-5. Let's look at it a different way. You knew they were playing bad teams. This is how bad. The Bears have the lowest strength of victory percentage in the NFC. 259. They've taken advantage of cupcakes is what that means. And that's good. There's something to be said for that. They've blown out these cupcakes. May start slow, but they've blown out these cupcakes. But their strength of victory is lowest in the NFC. You know who's the next lowest? Yep, your Commanders at 265. The Commanders hold the second seed in the playoffs right now. Now let's talk about strength of schedule. Or weakness of schedule. The Commanders have the weakest strength of schedule in the NFC at 388. Guess who's second? Oh, you know, this is a rigged test, isn't it?
Bears.
Right, at 390. The Commanders at 388, the Bears at 390 in strength of schedule. Bears are barely stronger than the Commanders. So you understand why this is... What is this team? What are we dealing with?
But they are who we thought they were.
Well,
and we let them off the hook.
We don't know what they are. The NFC North teams above the Bears, Lions, Packers, and Vikings, all have a strength of schedule over 500. So they played a tougher schedule. And then they're going to get the schedule the Bears played. Seemingly that would help them. So it seems like Jaden Williams, Jaden Daniels, oh my God, I just conflated them. There's your first and second round. Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, if Jaden Daniels plays. But anyways, they've been playing the JV schedule. While the other teams have, with the better records, stronger strengths of schedule, have been playing varsity teams. Still trying to evaluate the Bears, the Commanders, and vice versa. They're the same team. Young quarterbacks. The Bears seemed more to have more weapons. They seemed more prepared. Now, the Commanders' offensive line seemed better to start the season. The Bears' skill positions were better. The defense was going to be whatever it was going to be, and you hoped it was good for the Bears. And I don't know, it looks like Caleb Williams is going to have a chance to put up a lot.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
More than that, Caleb Williams started wonky, and now he's scorching. Jaden Daniels started big, entered the MVP talk, but he might not even enter the game because of rib injury. See, there's more to this of trying to get who they are. I mean, you would, if the Bears were as good as we thought they were, it's like, this is easy. Forget it. Right? This is a laydown. This is four in a row. We haven't seen that from, God, when did we ever see that? And then you look at Matt Eberflus. He's 3-16 on the road. He has never beaten a team over 500 in the opponent's stadium. And the Bears really need to beat a team over 500 just to stop this nonsense. But then, Daniels, unlikely to play, means Marcus Mariota is going to play. So the Bears will be facing a backup. What kind of evaluation will that give us? A backup quarterback. If they lose to a backup, if they lose to a head coach they passed on, if they lose to an offensive coordinator they also let go, then does Sunday afternoon on the Scores postgame show become a referendum on Eberflus and Waldron?
I don't know.
I'll hang up and listen for my answer. I still don't know. But we're going to have guests on who may be able to tell us. Coming up soon, Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times. He wrote about some rather interesting things. The offensive coordinator of the Bears let get away, Cliff Kingsbury. And how Caleb Williams is facing the blitz and owning it. And does he have a handle on the Bears? At noon, Hub will be here. We will talk to Hub again, ask him the same kind of kick around the same ideas. Also in the noon hour, Nick Allegretti, local hero. He plays for the Commanders. He was on with Mully and Haw, and it was just great. It was a wonderful interview. He's a great kid, and it's something we wanted to bring back to you. 1 o'clock, Mark Schanowski. Look at that. Look at the Bulls. Mark Schanowski's going to be here talking Bulls. That was the way it should have looked all along.
I think he's calling the game on today, too, as well, on CHSN.
Is that what Mark's doing? Well, you don't need to say, I think. See, you need to know, so I don't have
to. He told me he's calling the game on Saturday.
Okay, you need to get me all his cred, Sean.
Yeah. I guess that's my job, huh?
All of it. All the basketball things that Mark Schanowski does.
I will get those to you.
Yeah, I need that.
I will get it all for
you. So that was what was supposed to happen. They took more threes than the Bucks. They had better shooting, better three-point percentage. They beat the Bucks in the Bucks home opener. And it was far fewer. They had fewer turnovers in the Bucks, but far fewer than that disaster in New Orleans. And we saw Patrick Williams actually show up for a half. And they're playing tonight. We got news on stuff that's going on as Alex Caruso comes back. We'll also talk with Chris Russell. He was on a couple weeks ago when we got ahead of the Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. Caleb and Jaden. We talked about that. But now, as we discuss what this game means, with it doesn't matter if it's the best division in football or not. And it seems you've outkicked your coverage if that's what you're calling it. Because the Bears, we just told you, weak strength of schedule, weak strength of victory. How good can it really be? You give the Bears credit for beating up what was in front of them. They did that. It's all you can ask of them. Anything more, and you're guessing. But Chris Russell covers the Commanders for Odyssey's 106.7 station in D.C. What is this game? What's the talk back there? And how much does it change the prism through which they're looking at it if it's Mariota? And Olin Krutz, who's on with the new wonderful Spiegel and Holmes pairing, Olin Krutz, he's got stuff. He's got things to say. Olin Krutz. So we'll hear. And you know what? We're also going to hear from Vin Scully, Jack Buck, maybe even Al Michaels. There's a whole lot going on Saturday Suckage. But you knew that. I'm Steve Rosenblum. I suck so you don't have to. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not like, you know, he's had any cupcakes.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party...
Well, we just tried to lay out for Patrick Finley's walk-up song, but eventually we're going to have to get around to introducing Patrick Finley on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois, but we always like to have that. And Patrick himself of the Sun Times likes to hear that. Inspiring and motivating, isn't it, Patrick?
It's perfect. Perfect for a Saturday afternoon. The sun is out. It's warm. And we got a little Golden Girls on the AM radio. It's
there you great. Go. Thank you for being a friend and coming on to the show. So this week, I had started the show. I'm flummoxed and addled, which is a general state, but I looked at the strength of schedule and strength of victory of the Bears, and then looking at it with the Commanders, and they're the two weakest in the NFC, yep. And the Bears are in the playoffs, and the Commanders have the second seed by virtue of the division they're in, and so you say the Bears play in the best division, and is it really the best if they played, all they've done is beat cupcakes, and I'm trying to get a handle on really what they are and what's at stake tomorrow. Can you help me? Can you wrangle this?
I think there's more at stake for the Bears tomorrow because they're playing a division that we think is going to be four deep and that we think is going to be pretty good. You know, the Commanders, when you look at that NFC East, boy, the Giants are horrible. The Cowboys are horrible. You know, the Eagles are, you know, disappointing and maybe more horrible than the other two. So if they lose the game in mid-October, you know, they're probably going to be okay. I think the Bears need to keep up with the Joneses here. And, you know, your question about how do we know that this NFC North is good? You know, we don't. I mean, nobody's really playing each other. The Bears don't play their first NFC North game until, I want to say, the week before Thanksgiving. Like, 2 weeks after the NFL trade deadline, you know, they're getting, you know, six of their last eight games in the division there. And then we'll see how the Bears stack up against their real peers. In the interim, you know, it looks to be, you know, right now the strongest division in football.
My guest is Patrick Finley, the Chicago Sun-Times. We're talking Bears football here on The Score, Bears Commanders tomorrow. It's a game that Marcus Mariota figures to start instead of Jaden Daniels, the whole rookie headline thing, the guy the Bears took against the guy the Bears didn't, the offensive coordinator the Bears let go, and the one that they have. And you wrote about Kingsbury and his relationship with Caleb Williams and now his relationship with Jaden Daniels and what he's doing there. So how do you think the Bears made the right choice? What did you come away with from that piece?
You know, when he was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, Cliff ran a lot of four wide receiver stuff, a lot of college, you know, for lack of a better phrase, a lot of Mike Leach, Texas Tech kind of stuff. And I don't think that works in weather. And I don't think that works here in December and January.
Well,
this year, I think they're fourth in rushing. The Commanders, you know, Cliff knows how to run out of that offense. I just think it's hard to throw the ball around the field, you know, when you're playing outdoors at home. I don't think they messed up by not hiring him. I think interviewing him was probably the smartest thing they could have done, because not only did they get to evaluate Cliff, but they got to evaluate Caleb through Cliff. And you know, they'll say out loud now, hey, this wasn't a fact-finding mission on Caleb as much as it was on Kingsbury. But boy, you know, you have to think that they got some information about the quarterback they were about to draft.
Well, you'd be pretty stupid not to make it a fact-finding mission on both of them. I mean, I just, not that the Bears haven't done stuff like that before, but you, if you don't think you're getting a twofer and you don't take advantage of getting that twofer, I don't understand how you don't. You're sort of admitting, no, we didn't do that. Well, why not?
I don't. The Bears interviewed 8 guys for that job, and all of them either got hired as coordinators or as pass game coordinators around the NFL this offseason. So they had a pretty good list. You know, Shane Waldron's the one they fell in love with. Shane Waldron's the only one they brought home to meet mom, or brought home to meet George McCaskey, or however you want to phrase it. You know, he's the only one who went to Alex Hall, and they zeroed in on him. You know, something that was really important to them was hiring a coordinator who had experience before. You know, Luke Getsy didn't, and I think you could tell. So in Waldron, they found somebody, you know, who had done it for the last 3 years and who was kind of surprisingly unemployed once Pete Carroll was kind of shoved out in Seattle.
I don't think it's surprising if you followed what happened in Seattle. That Pete Carroll actually, without using his name, did call him out for not making the most of the offensive weapons he had, and made it a point last November, I think, when Pete Carroll talked about that, and they didn't perform particularly well afterwards, the offense didn't, and it seemed like this was a guy who was cut adrift and didn't have the support of his coach, no matter what Pete Carroll allegedly said to Matt Eberflus. And you could see early on in this season, Waldron needed a come-to-Jesus talk with the offense. So since then, things have gotten a lot brighter, haven't they, Patrick Finley?
I'm knocking on wood. It's been a good month in Alice Hall, and I can't tell you how many good months I've ever covered in my 11 seasons on the beat here. But it's been a really good month, and they figured out a lot of stuff. You know, one of it, and this is a smaller thing than I think people make too much of this, but for Shane Waldron to come up with a script of, okay, here are the, you know, 15 plays or whatever that we are going to run early in the game, regardless of situation, that's different. You know, at the start of the year, he just had a list of kind of priority plays, was what he called it. So maybe it's not a list, maybe it's a cluster. And the Bears players told him after the Colts game that they would prefer a list. So that's what he did. I think that flexibility is a sign of strength and not of weakness. I don't know why he didn't have a list to begin with. I think it's something that he hasn't always done. That's helped. I think going no huddle has helped tremendously to have Caleb stand there at the line of scrimmage, be able to evaluate the defense, for the Bears coaching staff and for Caleb to know what the personnel is on the other side of the ball. You know, defenses can't really run in a lot of guys if you're going no huddle. And for the Bears to show a couple of different looks, you saw it, you know, in the Jaguars game was, you know, they'd, you know, go 5 wide and sit there and look at the defense, and then 3 guys would shift, and all of a sudden you'd have a running back and an inline tight end and all that sort of good stuff. That's really helped Caleb get a sense of what the defense has, and I think that's smart. And do you know who else is doing that? The Commanders. They go no huddle a lot to give Jaden Daniels a good look, too. I think it's a smart way to bring a young quarterback along, and right now the Bears have been a lot better for it.
One of the things you wrote about this week that I found terribly revealing, and I want you to share this with the class, is Caleb Williams against the blitz. And there are a lot of numbers that show you how well he's doing. And again, against bad teams, bad defenses, but he's still doing it against NFL caliber blitzes. All you need to know is this. In weeks 1 through 3, 45.8 passer rating. In weeks 4, 5, and 6, a 148.8 passer rating against the blitz. So why has he become Tom Brady?
I think the offensive line's gotten better, and that's helpful. I also think that he's seeing things better. You know, you can take almost every statistical category, whether it's blitz, whether it's passing rating, whether it's short stuff, long stuff, play action, and he is getting better almost every week. I mean, his QBR, which is the ESPN passer rating stat, you know, he's gotten better from week 2 to now every single week is better. You know, he, I think, was 28th in passer rating in the NFL, something like that, through 3 weeks. And, you know, in weeks 4 through 6, he's something like, you know, 7th. Like, he, it's so satisfying to watch him check these boxes in real time. And almost to the point to where there have been 2 or 3 instances this year when a coach will say something to us during the week about what they want him to get better at, and he will get, and he will be great at that on Sunday. Like, not 2 weeks later, not 3 weeks later, but immediately. That's just really, really fun to watch. And you know, it's not always going to be this way. He's going to obviously plateau and have his ups and downs. But he's just put together a really, really good month of football, not only for his short-term prospects, but for his long-term prospects, too.
You talked about earlier what it's making it feel like an important game for the Bears. They're playing a team over 500. Matt Eberflus has not beaten a team over 500 on the road. And my another way I looked at it, through the prism I looked at it, is, okay, it's a quarterback the Bears didn't take. He probably won't play. So you're playing against a backup. And the coach the Bears did not choose. And the offensive coordinator the Bears did not choose. And if you lose to those conditions, then suddenly, is this a referendum on Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron by the time the score is post-game show?
It might be early for that.
This is talk radio, Patrick.
I had to be a voice of reason in October. Yeah, you know, how about this? Not only has Matt Eberflus never beaten a winning team on the road, there's another stat I love, which is he's never won a road game on a Sunday. The 3 road games he's won have either been on Thursdays or Monday nights. And my favorite is that the Bears are 1-19 in their last 20 games against winning teams on the road. And the one game they won was when they were in Las Vegas and John Gruden had sent those emails. And he was literally about to step down the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So the one game they won was against the most distracted team in the NFL that season, whose coach was on the verge of walking out the door. You know, the Bears have had 4 or 5 years of just absolute ineptitude on the road. You know, losing another one, I don't know that it'll feel like a step back, but they have an opportunity to take a pretty good step forward here, even if it's against Marcus Mariota. And the other thing, too, is, you know, we talk about that divisional schedule toward the end of the season. You know, you've got this game, then you go to Phoenix to play the Cardinals, and then you're home for the Patriots. And after that, your last easy day was yesterday. The rest of their schedule is incredibly difficult. It's, you know, NFC North teams at home against the Seahawks, at the 49ers. You know, it's realistic that the Bears might not be favored. I mean, they could not be favored the last 8 games in the season, maybe. So you need to collect these wins now because, you know, beating Marcus Mariota at the end of the year counts just as much as beating a good team.
And actually, more. It's a conference game.
Yeah.
And that's a tiebreaker.
Well, and at the end of the season, you know, I mean, that Colts loss they had was just so brutal,
mm-hmm.
in part because Anthony Richardson was one of the worst starting quarterbacks I've ever seen and on that day. And, boy, they are going to be kicking themselves at the end of the season. You know, if they end up a game short of where they want to be, that's a game they could have had. I look at this game as a game that they could have, too. And I don't think you can go for 2 in those sort of toss-ups and hope to be contending in this really difficult NFC North.
All right. Well, look forward to what you have to say coming out of it in the following week, and perhaps for future reference, you can see, people don't know that Patrick Finley is a very talented artist. He he frequently drew Bears practice diagrams. Perhaps some of you remember them on Twitter. And I don't know why certain teams and cable companies don't avail themselves of your ability, Patrick. You know, it's always good to have a side hustle. I would think that you'd be capable of those artistic chops on say on the ice or artistic chops on the hardwood. I think you'd be capable of that. Do you?
I think if I made a flip book, maybe we could sell it as B-roll. and TV stations can use it in the background. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that.
I'm going to have Shanowski on at 1. We'll talk to him about that for you.
Pitch him for me. Let me know how it goes. I'll give you
10%. All right. Patrick, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times. Always a lot of fun. Our golden guy. Oh, no, that would make him too old. We don't want to. He doesn't want to do that. By the way, let me alert you. Listen, let me alert you to this broadcast note. Before Chicago takes on Washington, tune in tomorrow from 12 to 3 p.m. for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley as they'll get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, Mully, Olin, and Manley will have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago and TimberTech Decking and Railing. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. You know what else can be heard right here on The Score? World Series history. World Series fun. Some of the greatest moments. Legendary. Classic. Going to bring it to you. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. So, this is pretty amazing. We saw history in the World Series. But we didn't, because it was a World Series first, but we know we'd seen it before, and we did, in the same stadium, in the same Dodger uniform, at almost the exact same local time. Freddie Freeman did the full Gibby. So 36 years ago, Gippy Kirk Gibson. And look who's coming up. He limped to the plate, smacked a game one homer off in the bottom of the ninth in Dodger Stadium to bring the Dodgers from behind 5-4 win over Tony La Russa's A's. And there it was. Last night, extra innings, Dodgers down, a run again. Freddie Freeman comes to the plate. He's got a badly injured right ankle, as opposed to the whole gimpy knee leg thing that Gibson had going. And he comes to the bat with the bases loaded, bottom of the 10th in Dodger Stadium. And this is why we watch the games. He belted the first walk-off grand slam in World Series history. Dodger 6, Chenke's 3. Game 1, World Series, classic, legend. And almost to the minute. Local time is about 8:38 for both of them, both Gibson and Freeman.
But we have a big 3-2 pitch coming here from Eckersley. Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field. This is going to be a home run. Unbelievable. A home run for Gibson. And the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw.
Jack Buck. That's legendary. Gibson's home run off the best in the game. Gibson hit it off the best in the game, Dennis Eckersley. And the best that ever was behind a microphone called it.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
Vin Scully, legendary, perfect for a moment like that. And then Freddie Freeman, he didn't face the best. He did it against a starter turned patient turned reliever who hadn't pitched in a month because of a left flexor elbow strain. Oh, and that was the choice. And now Nestor Cortez has a World Series ERA of 54. Oops, babe.
Cortez delivers. Freeman hits the ball to right field. She is gone!
Joe Davis on Fox, and he went on, and Joe Davis in the exchange, and they as he was rounding the bases, they show the replays the way they did, and it was really well done. Camera angles are really good. Joe Davis with, I mean, that's when you're doing that, when you're in the middle of it, you can't let the moment overwhelm you. I don't know it as a broadcaster. I've never called that kind of thing. I've never called the Freeman home run type of thing, the Gibson home run type of thing. But you heard what Jack Buck, a Hall of Famer, said. As honest as it could be, you heard what Vinny said. The poet laureate of the booth. Just brilliant. And then Joe Davis, who followed Vinny. He had the unenviable task of following Vinny on Dodger baseball, an area calling the World Series on Fox with the Doyers playing, legendary Dodgers-Yankees rivalry that's unrivaled. It is at that level so many times, such great battles. And there's that moment. And Joe Davis, you can listen to the longer version of it. He's great as you watch the, you know what? We have it. We're going to play it. Here's Joe Davis.
As it was on an October night 36 years ago, a hobbled game one hero for the Dodgers, Freddie Freeman with a walk-off grand slam to win game one of the World Series 6-3 over the Yankees.
Unbelievable. Went up there looking for a pitch. He got it. There's just no way to describe. I mean, there's just no way to describe it.
Would you say you don't believe what you just saw?
Yeah.
They retire Ohtani. They walk Betts. And Freddie Freeman, who hadn't had an extra base hit in a month before today, legged out a triple in his first at-bat. And he ends this game jumping on the first pitch and launching a no-doubt grand slam that they'll talk about for ages.
That's Joe Davis. Now, you see, he referenced Jack Buck. And it's just, he's replacing Joe Buck on the World Series. And Joe Buck referenced his dad in when the, was it the, oh, what was the world?
The see you tonight, right? We'll see you tomorrow, right?
We will see you tomorrow night. Was that the Rangers? Is that the Rangers-Cardinals World Series? But the home run decided it, and Joe Buck references his father simply by the line, and we will see you tomorrow night, which Jack Buck said. I think it was the 1991 World Series with the Twins and Kirby Puckett's home run. And it was just, it was wonderful. And you hear that, and I remember in writing for so many years, you long to watch great moments. We saw Michael Jordan win 6 titles here. We saw greatness. You go back to the 85 Bears, and there was at certain point in time, you go, how do I? With the Bears, it was easy. They only did it once. They should have won 3. They only won 1. But with Michael Jordan, how do I describe this again? And oh my God, he did what? That kind of thing. It felt that way with the Blackhawks, too. There were more guys who could be heroes. Thank you, Dave Boland. And so there's the longer roster helped. Basketball, it's even tougher. And I remember, and I'm thinking, how do you do that? When I was younger, 40 years ago, on a staff, the LA Daily News, we had a terrific basketball writer named Mike Ventry. He's writing Celtics, Lakers. He's covering the Lakers. He's writing Celtics, Lakers, and sometimes he's writing Jack Nicholson. And he's covering those series. How do you, have you watched, if you were an NBA fan, if you're my age, you're an NBA fan, you go, that's spectacular stuff. Yeah, it was. And now you got to write to that level. Paul McLean covered golf for us at the Daily News. And he covered the 1986 Masters. Perhaps you remember it. Maybe, yes, sir. Jack Nicholson, 46, wins the Masters. And I asked him when he came back. How do you write to that level? That's spectacular. And he said, I just write birdies and bogeys, which was another way of saying, if you have a great story, tell it. Get the hell out of the way and tell that story. It's a great lesson for journalism kids, if there are any left. And don't go to work for the Washington Post, by the way, unless you are spineless. The idea of covering, writing, meeting that moment is something that you don't know until you know. You don't know until you get there. You've not faced that moment, right? There are two things. I hope we come up to it. I hope we have time for it later in the show. We have just a jam-packed show. Next hour, we'll have Hub. We have an interview with Nick Allegretti of the Washington Commanders. And then later on, a texter, 815 texter, as a regular Mexican listener, I want your thoughts on Fernando Valenzuela. And, you know, I spent a lot of time this week when Fernando passed. I lived through Fernando Mania. And that's really where the Doyers became the Doyers. And it was, it healed cultural rifts and made a lot of Los Angeles whole again. I mean, no, it's not a part of the story often told, but that was really important in LA. And what we're talking about now, meeting the moment, is also, there's an anniversary with the Miracle on Ice team. You talk about meeting the moment, Al Michaels. And I mean, no matter how many times you've heard it, said it, used it, I can't get enough of that. I love the story. I love what he said and how it resounded. And there are other parts of that. We hope to get to that later in the show. This is quite the day. Do you know, 40 years ago today, Michael Jordan played his first basketball game for the Bulls in the regular season? 19 years ago today, the White Sox won the World Series. And it appears it'll be another 19 years before they even have a shot at the next one. But that's not why you called. Why you called was Bears, Commanders. How good are the Bears? How good are the Commanders? They look like the same team to me. Maybe Hub can help me wrangle this dilemma. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.